This is Nightly Business Report with Tyler Matheson and Sue Herrera.
Retail history. Cyber Monday could be the biggest U.S. shopping day ever, and Amazon is at the center of it all.
Busy builders. Sales of new built homes surge unexpectedly, hitting a 10-year high as supply remains scarce.
High court case. Big Pharma and Big Tech are on opposite sides of a high-stakes patent battle with billions at stake. Those stories and more tonight on Nightly Business Report for Monday, November 27th.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome. The Dow closed at a record high to start the week, but we begin with retail, which got a lift today on expectations that this could be the biggest ever internet shopping day in U.S. history. Consumers bargain hunting on their computers, their phones, whatever. That brightened the outlook for the long-suffering retail sector that's been beaten, bruised, battered all year long. The biggest player in online retail, of course, is Amazon, and today its shares briefly rose above $1,200 a piece. They closed slightly below it, as you see right there. Human workers at its fulfillment centers told like caffeine-crazed elves. Courtney Reagan was among them in Robbinsville, New Jersey.
It was a record-breaking weekend for online sales, and shoppers aren't done yet. Cyber Monday is forecast to be the biggest online sales day ever in the U.S., hitting more than $6.5 billion by some estimates, above last year, though still just a fraction of Alibaba's Singles Day in China, which topped $25 billion. And when asking consumers where they were shopping online today, one site is king.
Yes, Amazon.
On Amazon, I've already bought something.
Amazon's online dominance is likely to swell on key shopping days. Some say Amazon may have gotten up to half of all online sales on Black Friday. That's a little more than what's seen on a typical day.
This is one of about 75 of Amazon's U.S. fulfillment centers. This covers a million square feet. There are 14 miles of conveyors, 5,000 full-time workers, thousands more seasonal workers, and thousands of robots work together to fill your Cyber Monday orders.
Cyber Monday is one of our biggest shopping days. Last year, customers ordered more than 64 million items worldwide. That's a staggering 740 items per second. And we are off to a great start for our holidays.
And when Amazon grows sales,
there's going to be upside to the overall numbers for the industry, the e-commerce industry.
Amazon's already outsized influence can still make it feel like the entire industry is growing right along with it. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Courtney Reagan in Robbinsville, New Jersey.
Well, the rise in Amazon stock means the net worth of its founder and CEO, Jeff Bezos, is being pushed even higher. Robert Frank has more on his 12-digit fortune.
With Amazon shares hitting new highs, Jeff Bezos is now worth more than $100 billion. That's the first time that anyone has reached the 12-figure mark since Bill Gates back in 1999. Now, Bezos' wealth has increased by more than $33 billion this year, and he's up over $50 billion over the past 2 years. Now, to put that wealth into perspective, Bezos could spend over $6 million a day, or $250,000 per hour, for the rest of his life and still have billions left over. So what is he going to do with it all? Well, so far, Bezos has not announced any concrete plans for philanthropy. And he has pledged to give away only $68 million, or less than one-tenth of 1% of his wealth. He has not signed the giving pledge, and unlike virtually all the other billionaire tech founders, he doesn't have a foundation or charitable LLC devoted to social change. Now, in June, he did tweet out a request for ideas for philanthropy, saying he wanted to, quote, focus on the here and now of need. So far, he hasn't said which of those ideas he will choose. And Bezos may be about to redefine philanthropy just as he has revolutionized retailing. He has sold $1 billion worth of Amazon stock each year to fund Blue Origin. That's his space company that aims to colonize Mars. And he purchased the Washington Post, which he sees as important for democracy. Bezos has said that, quote, for-profit models can improve the world more than philanthropy models. So what would it take for Bezos to become the first trillion-dollar man? Well, Amazon stock would have to hit 12,500, about 10 times where it is today. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Robert Frank.
The nation's home builders are getting busier. Sales of newly built homes surged for the third straight month, hitting a 10-year high, well above expectations. Diane Olick has our story.
The supply of existing homes for sale in October hit another new low, and that is fueling demand for new construction, even though new homes come at a price premium. New home sales surged to the highest pace in a decade in September and then again in October. While some of that may have been demand pulled forward from two major hurricanes, sales have been rising steadily all year. This as existing home sales have been falling due to tight supply.
We believe that you have a number of positive factors influencing the housing market year to date, including job growth, consumer confidence, as well as modestly easing lending standards.
The builders may be benefiting from the severe shortage of existing homes for sale, but they're still not able to build nearly as many starter homes as buyers would like. They cite the high costs of land, labor, and materials, as well as a labor shortage. Slowly, however, they are meeting the demand, especially since the biggest buyer group, millennials, have waited longer and may now have more buying power.
You certainly have a shift of the home builders catering more towards the entry level. At the same time, I think the millennials are starting to come into their own.
The October report showed that the number of homes sold but not yet started also hit a decade high, which means the builders have a lot of work ahead. The only trouble is they still aren't finding enough workers to do it all. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Diana Olick in Washington.
Svenja Gudell joins us now to talk more about the health of the housing market. She is the chief economist at Zillow. Welcome. Nice to have you here.
Thanks so much for having me.
So give me your read on this report, especially given the fact that this is the second one in a row that was a bit of a surprise to the street and stronger than expected.
Right. You know, a good surprise on this one. And we certainly didn't think it was going to be quite as positive as it was. We're close to 700,000 units being built annually, and that was great news. Also, a good take on the fact that prices are being kept in check. So we're seeing a bit of a turn by builders to try to cater to the entry-level segments. Not super low entry, but at least targeting millennials, which are coming into the market more and more. And baby boomers, as they try to scale down what their current living situation is as well. So mm-hmm. healthy demand is being at least met by a little bit more supply. Not enough yet, but we're on the right track.
You and many others in your field say that we are in and have been in a sort of an inventory crisis for some
right.
years. Why is that? The population isn't growing that fast.
Well, you know, it's sad to kind of think about this, but inventory levels are kind of back where they were in the early 90s, even though the population has grown quite a bit since then. And we're just seeing that builders are having a hard time keeping up to demand. And, you know, it's the three L's we talk a lot about, lumber, labor, and land, really, trying to find cheaper land to build on. And that makes it really hard to actually build in urban centers, which are in high demand. On top of that, we're seeing a bunch of homes that used to be in the existing housing stock that aren't available anymore because they've been converted into rentals. So we're seeing a lack of actual homes trading hands at mm-hmm. this point. And, you know, all these things in some areas like Vegas, Chicago, we still have a fairly high amount of negative equity where you owe more in your mortgage than what your home is worth. So these homes are also not being sold.
Right.
So some of these characteristics are really keeping inventory back. And at the end of the day, it's a bit of a musical chairs phenomenon, too, where you actually have people not wanting to sell their home, even though it's a great seller's market, because they don't want to become buyers at the end of it all. Exactly, right? They just stay and renovate their home, basically.
Svenja, there's also a worry, at least in our neck of the woods, you know, the East Coast and the West Coast, where mm-hmm. the cost of housing is very expensive
right.
in general. The tax plan, which may eliminate or vastly reduce the mortgage deduction, how do you anticipate, if it goes through as it is put in place now, how do you anticipate that affecting the inventory cycle?
You know, the good news is that if possibly mortgage interest deduction gets capped or reduced, that should have no effect on the vast majority of buyers in the U.S. It will, however, negatively impact very expensive markets such as Manhattan, San Francisco, San Diego, a lot where, you know, where you're basically spending so much on a home that you want to spend more than half a million mm-hmm. on a loan. capital gains taxes could really keep inventory in check as people will be impacted to not want to move, you know, quite as soon as they perhaps would have originally. So it still remains to be seen what will actually happen. Salt will be an issue. State and local taxes, if kind of depends on what happens with those,
so
if that we can
means,
deduct our property taxes.
That means we'll have you back when we know exactly what's in the plan.
Thank you so much. That's right.
Svenja Gudell with Zillow.
Thank you.
The Federal Reserve is widely expected to raise interest rates at its meeting next month, and today the president of the Dallas Fed backed that stance. Robert Kaplan said that waiting too long to tighten policy could put the central bank behind the curve and increase the risk of recession. Previously, he said he wasn't certain whether a rate hike was needed in December. Kaplan is a voting member of the Fed this year.
As we mentioned, the Dow Jones Industrial Average closed at a record today, helped in part by shares of retailers. Investors also looked ahead to a possible Senate vote on tax reform. So here are the final numbers. The Dow Jones Industrial Average added 22 points to 23,580. The Nasdaq lost 10, and the S&P 500 was off 1. With the Dow at records and other indexes close to ones, could the market power even higher heading into the end of the year? Bob Pisani takes a look.
Once again, we are back at another new high, and the market leader, technology, back at new highs. So is this it? Is this the top? Well, some insist that it is, but for the moment, the market shows no signs of leveling off or even pulling back. There's two factors that typically indicate a market top. First, the advanced decline line, the number of stocks advancing versus those declining. It starts dropping fast. And second, the driving force in the market switches from buyers of stock to sellers. But none of this has happened. The advanced decline line is at a new high, and there's been no significant increase in selling pressure. Technical analysis firm Lowry has noted that declines in the advanced decline line have begun on average 4 to 6 months prior to the final market high. You based it on this metric, we're at least months from a market top, at least. So what would kill the rally? The market believes the rally's risen on the back of three factors. First, rising earnings, which could drop if a recession happens in 2018. Second, a tidal wave of buybacks, which could drop if it becomes too expensive to borrow money for the buybacks. And finally, and this is the most important issue, if the Fed starts raising rates much quicker than the market expects. Most traders agree that would be the final blow to this amazing nine-year rally. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Bob Pisani at the New York Stock Exchange.
And still ahead, lawmakers are back at work, though maybe not like caffeine-crazed elves. They do, though, have a long list of things to get done before Christmas time. Republican senators are going full speed ahead with their tax overhaul plans, returning to Washington and meeting with the president about their proposal.
It's going to be tax relief for hardworking middle-income and lower-income families. That's definite. And the other definite part of this tax reform is making American business competitive.
John Harwood is following the story from Washington. Hi, John. You know, there's going to be a lot of talk, a lot of arm twisting over the next few days to get the votes needed. Where do things stand? When is the vote planned? And how does it look like it's breaking?
The hope for Republican leaders, Tyler, is to have a vote as early as Thursday or by the end of the week. Now, of course, as we've seen in previous fights over health care, if they don't have the 50 votes they need to pass, and there are only 52 Republicans in the Senate, they need 50 of them, if they don't have the votes, they will delay the vote because they don't want this to be killed. As of right now, there are some shaky votes, but we do not have firm declared no's to oppose this bill. So Republican leaders are feeling confident that they will be able to pass it. We will see, because there are significant criticisms of the amount of growth that would be caused by this bill. Some of the analyses say not very much. Of the amount of deficit increases, those would be significant. And the fact that the benefits of these tax bills are tilted toward the top of the income scale.
There's also, John, the looming threat of a possible government shutdown. The deadline is Friday, next Friday, December 8th. So what are you hearing about that particular issue?
I think that it is unlikely that there will be a shutdown, but that depends on probably on the Trump administration, as it's done in the past, giving in to Democrats on some key issues like the DACA issue, for example, dreamers who have legal status in the country. They need Democratic votes, unlike on taxes or on health care. They need Democratic votes to keep the government open. Democrats are going to play hardball.
And it was, if nothing else, an unusual day at the CFPB, the Consumer Financial Protection Board. There were two acting directors, one of whom arrived with donuts, John. That's got to ingratiate them. What's going on here? How is this going to play out?
Eventually, Donald Trump and the Republicans are going to win because the president has the authority to appoint a permanent director, and the Republican Senate will confirm one. But as of now, Democrats who participated in the creation of Dodd-Frank and people sympathetic to them at the CFPB are staging a rearguard action to at least slow that down. So the deputy director under Richard Cordray, who quit, was installed as acting director, but the president has designated Mick Mulvaney as acting director. This is going to be resolved by courts. There's a lawsuit involved. But in the end of the day, President Trump's going to win this fight.
All right, John, thanks very much. John Harwood in Washington tonight.
The Supreme Court today heard oral arguments in a fracking patent case, a case that got the attention of both the world's largest technology companies and some of the biggest drug makers. That's because the suit focuses on how patents can be challenged to keep part of both industries' businesses. Billions of dollars are at stake, and in an unusual twist, a Native American tribe has a lot at stake as well. Meg Terrell explains.
The case has to do with the America Invents Act, heralded when it was passed in 2011 as the most sweeping change to our patent system in half a century. And it was supported at the time by both the technology and pharma industries. Former Eli Lilly CEO John Lechleiter was at the ceremony where President Obama signed the bill into law. But one facet of that law has now divided those two industries and is being challenged as unconstitutional in a case called Oil States Energy Services v. Greens Energy Group. On one side, tech giants Apple, Facebook, Google, and others, and on the other, big pharma companies. At issue is a system known as Inter Partes Review, or IPR, which gives patent challengers a route through the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office to try to invalidate patents. The argument for it, championed by tech companies, is that system is more efficient than going through the federal courts.
It's been a really useful tool for companies to defend against patents that shouldn't have been issued in the first place.
Joshua Landau, patent counsel for the Computer and Communications Industry Association, estimates it's already saved $2 billion in legal fees alone. But the pharma industry says the IPR system requires it to defend patents in multiple venues with different standards, with rules that are less fair to patent owners than in federal court. Critics say it's lowered the value of patents in the U.S. by as much as $1 trillion, though that figure has been disputed.
The American Invents Act was an effort to destroy the U.S. patent system, and they've done a pretty darn good job of doing it.
One drug maker, Allergan, even transferred the patents for a $1 billion drug to a Native American tribe in order to avoid these IPR challenges. Allergan paid the tribe almost $14 million to use its sovereign immunity to shield the patents for the eye drug Restasis from IPR challenges from generic drug makers. In return, the St. Regis Mohawk tribe received much-needed new funds.
It's always been our intent and intent to pass councils to look at diversifying our revenue, to look at creating revenue streams that are not completely dependent on the gaming industry.
If the court upholds the IPR system, the tribe sees an opportunity to diversify its economy. In recent years, the tribe's leaders say gaming revenue from its casino has leveled off. What's more, the nearby St. Lawrence River has been polluted over decades by three nearby factories, now designated by the Environmental Protection Agency as Superfund sites.
We are experiencing high rates of cancer, autoimmune diseases, thyroid issues, other chronic health conditions due to the toxic legacy of the industry along the St. Lawrence River. And we've had to deal with that, and it's quite expensive.
The Allergan deal has been heavily criticized, with one senator, Claire McCaskill of Missouri, seeking to strip tribes of their sovereign immunity to these patent challenges. The tribe called the move a double standard, as state universities have the same protections.
It's almost like an economic apartheid where we're not allowed to do certain things. unless otherwise given permission.
The Supreme Court is expected to decide the case by June of next year. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Meg Terrell.
The magazine publisher Meredith thinks Better Homes and Gardens will buy Time Incorporated, and that's where we begin tonight's Market Focus. Meredith, with financial backing from the conservative billionaire Koch brothers, will buy the publisher of Time, Sports Illustrated, and People, among others, for nearly $3 billion. Meredith said the Kochs will not have board seats or influence editorial operations. Time Inc. shares rose nearly 9.5% to $18.50. Shares of Meredith popped more than 10% to $67.55. Barracuda Networks will go private. The data security company said it agreed to be bought by the private equity firm Thoma Bravo for about $1.5 billion. Shares of Barracuda took off, rising 16% to $27.59.
Teva outlined a reorganization plan it hopes will improve profitability. The world's largest generic drug maker will combine its generic and specialty drugs businesses into one unit. Last week, we told you about reports that Teva was cutting up to 25% of its workforce. Shares of Teva gained more than 7% to close the day at $14.65. Strong demand is driving growth at the RV maker Thor Industries. The company reported stronger than expected profits and sales, saying price hikes and an increase in production helped results. Shares initially rose in the extended session, but finished the regular day down a fraction to $136.25. Coming up, steals and deals. Why this holiday shopping season could put you at a higher risk of being hacked.
Bargain hunters are out in force this time of year, but so are hackers, raising the risk that your data will be stolen. Aditi Roy reports.
Kevin Hardy loves to shop online.
I buy all sorts of things from Amazon, from like clothes to photography equipment, shoes, electronics, cell phones, pretty much everything.
Despite high-profile breaches involving companies like Equifax and Uber, Hardy doesn't worry about getting hacked. On this Cyber Monday, he says he'll be looking online for deals.
You never know what you're going to come across.
But what he may come across is the wrong type of steal. A recent study by cybersecurity firm Carbon Black finds that hacking attempts go up during the holidays. The threat assessment analysis revealed a 20% spike in attempted cyber attacks in December of 2016 over the previous month.
Behind every attack, there's a person. That person understands how we behave. And so they're trying to drive their attack so that they can get us to click on a link.
The company's CEO says the hackers don't even have to work that hard because they can often distract holiday shoppers online through fake seasonal promotions. Those links can end up being clickbait that leads unsuspecting consumers into the hands of hackers. E-commerce companies are fighting back, pouring significant resources into securing their networks. One example is PayPal. The online payments firm has a command center to preempt threats. It has also shelled out more than $2 million to individuals who have found vulnerabilities in their system. New York's Attorney General also came out with an alert on how consumers can protect themselves online. One recommendation, shop only on secure internet connections. When entering payment information, make sure your URL begins with HTTPS and not just HTTP. And beware of fake websites. If you see a link to a deal on email or social media, don't click on it. Instead, type the address directly into your web browser. Despite warnings, some shoppers like Hardy say they're not worried about getting hacked.
I mean, I think these people have too much time on their hands to sit around hacking other people's accounts.
But security experts warn it often doesn't take hackers much time, effort, or even money to pull off a successful breach. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Aditi Roy, San Francisco.
And that's Nightly Business Report tonight. I'm Sue Herrera. We want to remind you that this is the time of year your public television station seeks your support.
I'm Tyler Matheson. We thank you for your support. Have a great evening, everybody, and we'll see you right back here tomorrow night.